Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of the day for the 4th of Shvat. And today we're going to get to meet a new respondent to Chavot Yair, Rav Yair Chaim Bachrach, who was born in Leipzig, Germany in 1638. He studied in Germany, he had a hard life in the rabbinate, various positions, but he's got the Chavot Yair, which was evidence of his outstanding rabbinic scholarship, and he passed away in 1702. So Shu Chavot Yair is a shoot that I came, even when I wasn't yet sort of into shoot or looking at shoot a lot, I came across his shoot team, his responsa, and I was always very interested and very impressed by them and in them. So this shoot Chavot Yair is Simon Kuf Vav, number 106. So it's a question was sent to him from Mannheim, from one of his students, and the question goes like this. There's a certain woman in this town who everybody knows or is well known to be an angry woman, a difficult woman, somebody who as an employer is hard to get along with. And for that reason, she spent a couple of winters without any help around the house. And apparently in that community, you know, women of the house had help and she did not have help. And then so the beginning of this particular winter, I'm sorry, and this responsum is dated the 4th of Shvat of Dalet Lamed Tuf, which is 1674. So from 1674 in Shvat, though, so Shvat is already right after the winter, or basically after the winter is over. So the beginning of this past winter of Tuf Lamed Dalet of 1673 to 74, that winter, she had decided that she did finally need help, and therefore she had hired a young woman, a betula misharet, right, an unmarried woman, a young girl, for all you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, to help her out. And then, over the course of the winter, she was such a hard, tough employer, such a hard person to get along with, she made it so oppressive for this girl, she ran away. And they always had fights, they fought a lot, and so she ran away with 3 months left of the winter. It was like a six-month job, as it were, a six-month deal, and then she had 3 months left, but she ran away. She went to another man in the community or somewhere else, but the point was she took the new job just for room and board, all she got out of the new job. So basically, she's foregoing at least 3 months of salary, and the question whether she would be able to get her first 3 months of salary is a question of its own, but she was foregoing. That's how bad it was. The woman who had hired her for the next 3 months has to hire somebody else. And so she hired another maid, another helper around the house, but she had to pay her a lot more money, which makes sense because if she's so hard to get along with, you can imagine people say, well, I'll work for you, but it's going to cost you a lot of money. So she wants to take that money out of the young girl's salary from the first 3 months, meaning she claims the young girl. So the employer wanted to take the money out of that salary because theoretically, and we're going to see this in the tshuva as well, in the laws of employer labor, you know, employee-employer law, if an employee walks out on a job and therefore costs the employer money, the employer is allowed to charge that extra money that it costs to the employee who walked out on the job early. So that's what she's claiming here. She's claiming she had to pay more for her new maid, and therefore she wants to, her new help, and therefore she wants to take it out of the first one. So the man writing to the Chavosera says, can you tell me what is the Paschal on these issues? Now, the beginning of the tshuva is interesting to me because it maybe tells you, if the Bar Ilan tells us that he had a hard life in the rabbinate, some of his reaction here might tell you some of what, why it was a hard life in the rabbinate. He says, I'm sorry, before that, there's one last line of the question was that also the woman of the household, anytime something got broken or lost at all, she would charge it to the helper. So that this girl said, you know, I'm ending up losing my whole salary because anytime something, you know, you break a glass, she charges me for it. So things break in life, right? So she's upset. She's making, we might say, she's not making a lot of money. Let's say she's making minimum wage or whatever she's making, but she's making not a lot of money. And this woman, who's the woman in the household, clearly has more money than that. She chooses and says and decides that anytime something gets broken, she's going to charge her for it. So that's not a comfortable situation. That's why she left. And the man writing to Kalmazur says, and that was not the custom at the time. That was not the way these things, the women of the household, but not that this was, it's not that the employers in Germany were so mean. It was this woman was so mean. Other women would not have handled it that way. So these are all claims that are going back and forth between these two, because as we're going to find out, the girl had actually left her clothing in the house of her employer. So that was one issue and concern for her. And she was trying to get her salary, too, and her money. And so that was it. So all these questions were being dealt with and were being analyzed. And that's what he wanted the Chavos Yair to weigh in on. So now, in his answer, he starts off by saying, you know, I know you, and I know that you know Torah very, very well. You see, you're a Baki b'Chadrei HaTorah, and so I don't know why you're asking me simple questions. Zil Kari Beirav, the phrase of Zil Kari Beirav means things that are obvious and well-known even to elementary school students, and if you're asking me this stuff, because if I had asked you these questions, it would be clear that I was just coming to test you to make sure you were up on your studies the way you were supposed to be. So he says, I know that you know, for example, the laws of what happens when employees who want to leave a job in the middle, and it's all clear. It's in the Shulchan Aruch. It's like simple paragraphs. And if there was a specific paragraph in Shulchan Aruch that was unclear to you, you should have asked me what your specific question was. And then, so it must be that you want me to just rule on this particular question in this case, and that I can't do, basically, because it's not fair. So he said, right, so he doesn't know the actual case, he only knows what he's being told. So that he doesn't know. The Afki Katati says, Shelo Yavo Lichlal Din Ki Rabim Holchem Lipnitzopesher. And then he told me, well, you know, the truth is, you don't have to worry that I'm asking you for a psak, because the psak is not going to ever be put into play, because people are working hard to find a compromise between the two. Meaning the girl wants her money, she needs her money, she wants her clothing, and the employer, the woman, is this tough, hard woman. So people are trying to work it out. So he says, but the fact that you're asking me for a psak, and you're going to tell me, well, we won't use it because we're going to get the compromise, but it's still wrong of me to write an actual psak. And I can't do it just because I think that they might come to a compromise. So therefore, he says, I'm not coming for a psak. I'm not going to give you a psak. I'm not going to tell you stuff that's straight up in the Shulchan Aruch, even if they really need a clarification, because you should have asked me for that, basically. So he says, I'm going to tell you some of the issues that come up that maybe you weren't sure about them, and therefore you might have been trying to ask about this case. He says, in terms of the girl leaving when she claimed that the woman was working too hard, so presumably, he says, you don't have any doubts about that. You know that we know, you just look and you see what the story is in that town. If this is the amount and the level and the type of work that's expected from household work, then that's it. And that's what she accepted when she took the job. And if not, then not. So that's just a matter of checking out the facts of the situation. And if there's some who do this, who work her this hard, and some who don't, then we follow that, right? We follow the majority. And if you don't know who the majority is, then in general, while we say that employees, yadam al tachtona, meaning that the burden of proof is on them, their hand is on the bottom, meaning the other people that have the upper hand, is literally the way, is the idiom being translated into English. So normally we would say that the employee has to prove it. Nonetheless, in malacha, in the case of work, with whether or not the employee has to do certain work there, since we know that the employees have a right, halachic right, to change their mind in the middle of a job, and then it becomes a financial question, but nobody can say that you're not allowed to leave a job, and that's based on the Gemara. The Gemara points to a pasuk in the Torah that says, "Ki li b'nei shel avadim avadayim," that the Jewish people are slaves only to Hashem. And slavery, for the halacha, for the Torah, the key aspect of slavery is that you may not leave. You have to stay as long as the owner tells you to stay, as your owner tells you to stay. So an employee-employer relationship cannot be that kind of a relationship, because we don't hold of such things, because we say that the Jewish people are only slaves to Hashem, not to people. So therefore, in the case of employer-employee law, is saying the Chavot Yair, when there's a claim about who is out, whether the employee is obligated to do something or not, there's a doubt about that, you try to verify it. If you can verify it, great. If you can't verify it, so you'd say there, the employee has the upper hand in that discussion, because the employee can just walk away. Because the employee can say, I only serve Hashem, I don't serve you. And the fact that you're trying to claim that you a certain kind of labor, I'm not subject to that unless you can prove that that was part of the original agreement. So too, says the Chavot Yair. Another question that came up was, she also used to lock the food pantry so that there were where the bread was, so the girl couldn't get food without asking her. So that was another complaint of the employees, of this girl's. So the Chavot Yair says, if it was well known that this woman did this, right, and this girl who got hired had been in the city for a while, so she knows the way this woman works, meaning this woman used to have employees. If this woman used to have employees, then the word would get out about her rules, what her rules were in her house. So the word was out and she knew it, then we have to assume that when this girl took the job, she agreed to it. And if not, so then again, if we look in the city. If in general in that city, employers tend to do that, they lock up the food cabinet and you have to go to them for food. But if it's not the custom, then she can't make it the custom for this girl. And the fact, it seems like she said, well, this is the way I run my household, right? This is what I'm doing in my household, right? And the answer is, meaning I do it for my kids too. So the Chavasar says the kids don't count because if the kids bear this, she's the maid isn't required to. The kids are her family. That's tough on them, and it might be really tough on them. But it's not that's her. It's not her family, and it's not her the maid's obligation to do this. And she's not required to suffer what the kids do. Not only that, when the kids get hungry, you know what they do? They ask her because she's their mother. But the maid, every time she asks, she's making a bad impression. She has to worry. She has to do that, and therefore, it doesn't have to be that she has to bear that. So, too, with the woman saying, well, every single thing that she breaks, I'm going to charge her for. So, halachically, the truth is that's true because, says the Chavot Yair, the maid counts halachically as a shomeret sachar, meaning she's being paid to take care of the items in the household. And the halach is that when you're getting paid for something, so you have a higher level of responsibility for breaking. Now, the Chavot Yair doesn't go into it, and he said he wasn't going to fully go into it. Your Chayav for, he says, Gineva and Shvirat Keli, Ayide Takala, in Loshenish Baimach Ma'am Balacha, Osheneda Mimnea Bait Shavro. He says, if it wasn't broken in the course of work, right, if it broke or was stolen, she's obligated to pay it back. That's part of being a Shomer Tzachar, unless it was broken while being used as part of work. That's a little bit more complicated because I think there's also a category of onus. So the Chavot Yair is assuming that onus doesn't include if something just gets broken because it gets broken. But that would be a complicated set of questions. But in any case, theoretically, she's obligated, except that unless... if there's a common custom in the town or in the area that most women don't do that, they recognize that these girls aren't being paid a lot of money and therefore they don't do that, they're not makpidot, they don't insist on these kinds of things, then we can assume that she also assumed that would be going to be the category and the status of these things. So even though it's true, we don't say that we don't say follow the majority in things about monetary conditions, but if there's only a few, he says, one or two people in a city, so it would seem that but la data, we don't take them into account by other people, and that's just called a small minority. So then you could say that the maid can't and shouldn't be expected that she would have known this, and therefore it doesn't count, and therefore she shouldn't be liable for it. So he says, but I think you all know all this. So I think when you're looking into this, what you really cared about was the question of a poel shechazar bo. What's the halacha of an employee who in the middle of a job says, I don't want to do it anymore? So he says, you certainly know that the Ramah cites the Truman Adeshin, that a misharetet, a helper in a house, is called what's called a dover ha'avud. So a dover ha'avud means there's a difference between an employee who stops in the middle of a job and the job doesn't suffer for them stopping and it can be picked up at any time. So then the employer doesn't have any real complaints because he or she can just go out and get other employees and find other employees. But let's suppose, I've started watering a field. And once you start watering a field, unless you finish the watering job, it ruins the field. That's called a dover ha'avud. The right dover ha'avud is that it'll go bad unless I finish the job in a timely fashion. And then the pressure on the employer to find a new employee is much higher because the job has to get done. However, the Truma Suggestion held that was true of this of being a maid in a household because the work has to be get done right away. And if it's not done, it doesn't get done, and therefore it's a problem, especially if the winters were very hard and they were hiring people for the whole winter and they were around for the winter. It would be a dover ha'avud because it goes away, and it is something you can't replace. So therefore, you might think that makes it a more of an issue for the employee to leave, because in a dover ha'avud, the employee bears more of a responsibility for what will go wrong for the employer, because leaving isn't just a question of do you have rights to leave, don't have rights to leave. There, it's a question that you're damaging the employer by leaving. So the Chava Yair points out, though, that the Truman Edition says there that it's all a matter, we think it's a matter of re'ot enei hadayan, that it depends on what the judge thinks about, whether it's a davar avod or not, who's at fault or not, what was the pressure or not, and all these kinds of things. It's not cut and dry. And the Maharish Dam thought that the halacha was with the sakhir, that if it's a bad employer and the employer made it an intolerable workplace, as it were, or a hostile workplace and work environment, as it were, so then the employee was going to be able to leave. So this is where we come back to our case. This is Chavos Yair. If this woman was clearly well known to be a hard employer, and people hadn't signed up with her, so he says that then the maid he thinks is on top here because it won't be called the Dover Ha'avod because she managed the house without help for a couple of years. She didn't like it. She didn't enjoy it. But she managed it. So when the maid leaves now, she can say, well, you know, the last 3 months, you can handle it. I know you can handle it. But it's getting more complicated with the clothing of the maid that the woman's holding on to, because she's saying, I'm holding on to it for money that's owed to me. And taking it out of her hands will be more of a problem, because in halacha, the person who's holding on to something has the higher claim to it, unless we prove otherwise. You're going to have to prove that the maid had the right to leave and shouldn't have to bear financial consequences for leaving. And that was what the Maharash Dam said as well, meaning when the Maharash Dam gave the reasons for why he thought that the person who leaves doesn't have to pay extra. He said, the employer has to prove that it's a davar ha'avod. But here, since she's trying to get her clothing back, it's the maid who's going to have to prove that she had the right to leave and that she shouldn't have to bear any financial consequences for the leaving. In addition, if the woman who left was confident or claims that she could have provided help at a reasonable price, or at the same price as her, if only the employer, the woman of the house, had given her a chance to, and then this woman ran off to immediately find somebody higher price for it, so then that would be the employee's right to claim it, right? If she can show that, no, she could have found somebody else, she just didn't find anybody else, she wasn't given a chance to, because the employer had hired somebody too quickly, so that's going to be an issue as well, and that will be on the side of the maid, because she can say, then you can't charge me extra, because I could have gotten to you for the same price, right? You know, I'm doing work for you at $10 an hour, and I walk out of the job, but I happen to know 15 friends, you'd be happy to do it for $10 an hour, and then you went out and you hired somebody $20 an hour for the rest of the 3 months, and wiping out my whole salary, the answer is I don't have to pay for that. It's also true that in some households, you have a house staff that's large enough that nobody has to do all the work, that nobody's working all that hard. It's more a matter of their honor that they can have people around for whatever need they would want. So then if she left, then it's not considered a davar ha'avod anymore, because the work can get picked up. It's not going to be the same level of honor as they once had, but the work will get picked up and get done, and therefore also there wouldn't be a question of it being a davar ha'avod and she costing her and this maid who left costing her money. He says, but I still don't know what it is that you're curious about, because all this stuff I think is obvious. Reminds me, as I'm reading the tshuva over with you, that there's a story about the Beis Halevi, who was the Rabbi Soloveitchik's great-grandfather, the first Rabbi Halevi Soloveitchik. He said it was Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik. And the Beis Halevi supposedly once said, you know the difference between me and my son Chaim? He said, when people come to me and they ask me a question, I say, oh, that's a really great question, and I think about it for a long time, it takes me a while to figure out the answer, and then I come to them with the answer and I show them the answer, and he says, we all walk away happy, because I thought the person thinks they asked a great question, they get the impression, they get the feeling they asked a great question, and I feel like I came up with something really intelligent when I gave them my answer. He says, when you go to my son Chaim for the question, he says, that's not a question, he gives you the answer in 2 seconds, and then you don't feel good, he doesn't feel good, he didn't do anything, he didn't answer a real question, and they don't feel good. So Chavos Yair is sort of giving that impression here. He's saying, I don't know what the question is you're asking, because all the things that I'm telling you are obvious. Now, I don't know the person who's asking the question. It could be that they were not nearly as obvious to that person as we tend to think, that as the Chavos Yair tends to think. In any case, still searching for things that might not be so obvious, he says, maybe this whole halakha that the employee is allowed to leave in the middle of a job doesn't actually apply here. Because maybe what you're trying to imply or suggest is that the reason an employee is allowed to leave in the middle is because of, is in cases of kedibinei shel avadim avadayim, that the Jewish people are my slaves, Hashem's slaves, and not other people's slaves, that's where they can leave. But if you go, and that would mean if you are middle of working and you decide you don't want to work anymore, so that's what you're allowed to do. You're allowed to say, I don't want to work anymore. But if she left one employer and went to another one, that means she is still interested in working at this field, right? And if it's interested in working in this field there, maybe the Gemara never established the right to leave. Maybe that's more like a kablan, a contractor who contracted for work and then didn't pay the work. Maybe in that situation, there is no right to leave whatsoever, and you have to pay the owner for everything that happened afterwards. He says, you also might have thought, maybe, there's a man or woman. Maybe when the Gemara Torah says, the Jewish people are slaves to me, and therefore you can't keep them at work, maybe that was only about men and not women. And the reason why you might think that, says the Chavot Yair, is that with men, they have mitzvot that require their presence and their service to Hashem. But with women, you don't have the same level of mitzvot, because you don't have women who... Now, the Chavot is not going to end up this way. This is his line of thought, and I think it's an interesting train of reason to think about. He says, women are not obligated in mitzvot to say Shazman Grama. And we talk about the fact that some of the reason for that is that they shouldn't have to have obligations that take them away for another obligation. So today, people will suggest things like that mitzvot to say Shazman Grama, women are not obligated in because they have children to take care of. But the point being that when you have mitzvot to say Shazman Grama, but that can be an obligation that will require you at a certain point in time to leave whatever you're doing, and that women don't have those kinds of obligations for whatever reason they don't have them. But the Chavos Yair says one of the reasons, one of the outcomes of the fact they don't have them is that it might be that being a maid for a woman is not as much of a, doesn't impact her service of God, her ability to serve Hashem, as much as it would for a man. And therefore, maybe when the verse says that the Jewish people are my slaves and they can't be slaves to anybody else, and therefore we say that employees have to be able to leave their jobs when they feel the need to leave their jobs, maybe that's only about men and not about women. He also says that you don't see women being sold in halacha as much as I don't want to spend a lot of time on that, but he says you find people being, men can sell themselves as slaves, you find men can be sold for having stolen, you find selling, but with women, you find them as shvachot, you don't find them selling as much. I'm not sure that's so clear, that'd be a complicated conversation, but that's all he says about it. But we all fundamentally saying, maybe this whole halacha of kili b'nei sol vadim applies only to men and not to women. Then he says, but no, I don't think it's true. He thinks, it says an interesting idea, but it's not an interesting enough idea to allow us to create a whole new distinction that no other halachic decisor has ever mentioned. We don't generally assume that women are different than men in halacha, other than what we assume, other than what we know they are. So, for example, there are prohibitions of ribis and of weights and measures, and it mentions leaving Egypt. You might have said, "Well, the same way, right?" It says, "Because I took you out of Egypt." You might have thought, "Well, then it shouldn't apply to women, because maybe that's only about those things that are mitzvot to say that we have to keep all the mitzvot, not just mitzvot to say around grandma." But we don't say anything like that, and we say that in general, that all prohibitions, women are equally obligated, and therefore they're fully part of the group of people about whom the Torah says, I took you out of Egypt. And if that's true, it's about the group of people that took you out of Egypt, so then women are included. And therefore, there's no reason for that distinction, he says, between a maid and a man's slave in terms of leaving the job. He says, I could have made a distinction more significantly within the category of men, that it would depend on a man who has enough to live off of or doesn't have enough to live off of. And then if he has enough to live off of, so that's more like a job and he's just taking an employment. But if he has nothing to live off of and he signs up for a job because he has nothing to live off of, so there we might have said that it's like he's making himself a slave to somebody else, and that maybe he shouldn't do. I'm sorry, that if he didn't have anything, that he sold himself out because he needed food, there you might have thought it's more like slavery, and therefore you might have thought that he doesn't have any right to back out on it, and he has to prove it. In any case, fundamentally, the Chavos Yair ends here and basically says, so that's where he ends, he's not going to paskin, and these are the issues that come up, and these are the questions that come up. So it's a question of employee-employee law, it's questions of the reminder that Jews are always allowed to back out. They may bear financial consequences for backing out, but they are always allowed to back out because we are servants to Hashem and not to anybody else, and if we have a job that we're not allowed to leave, that is a form of servitude. And that is the Chavos Yair from the 4th of Shvat, of Dalet Lamed Tuf of 1617. 74. Then just to round out our time, to do it very briefly, Tiliezer was asked in Kedek Kav Bet, Volume 22, Simon Yud Zion, response number 17. This is from 1996, the 4th of Shvat. In Yerushalayim, he was asked about somebody who sadly lost a child, younger than 20, and the father is saying Kaddish for the child, which is a terrible, tragic situation. Lo Aleinu, we should say, even though we know such things, but the person asking the question, who I don't know if he was like directly involved in it or not, but the person's question was, first of all, he didn't understand whether it's true that fathers can say Kaddish for children, because the tradition in the Gemara is what's called Bura Mizake Abba. We today treat Kaddish sort of as, and the Tzitzit is not going to disagree, but we sort of treat Kaddish as, you know, it's sort of magic. Anybody can say it for anybody, but it really is based on the idea that children are seen as being a merit for their father. So when a child says Kaddish for a father, that's based on the fact that children are in some senses a continuation and a direct line of the father. It's just some random person. So this person said, so I don't understand, does Kaddish of a father for a son say anything? Not say anything, do anything. Does it have any function? Second question he asked also was, there's a tradition in the Gemara that people under the age of 20 are not judged by the heavenly court. Once you're 13, you're judged by a human court, but until the age of 20, you're not judged by the heavenly court. So if this young man unfortunately passed away before the age of 20, isn't he completely free of sin? And therefore, what's even the point of the Kaddish? So in the first question, the issue of father helping out a son, so he votes his point. So you have tshuvos already to talk about this. Then Rabbi Yehuda allowed it as long as it didn't get in the way. As long as it didn't get in the way of other people saying Kaddish. Remember that for a long time, the tradition was only one person said Kaddish at a time in a shul, in a room. So you'd have a question of who would get to say the Kaddish. Today, everybody just says it. But in the Rebbe Yehuda's time, people were still just dividing it up. So he said, you can give it if, no, it's not going to bother anybody else. If there's somebody there who has the real right to it, then they get it. That comes up today sort of in terms of people davening for the Omer and things like that. You can get into that question. But in addition, he pointed to the Shvut Yaakov had said that he also thinks that you can give them certain Kaddishim that were not really part of the original Kaddish and things like that. But he adds that he thinks the whole idea of Bra Mizaki Abba, Abba Lo Mizaki Bra, that the son really helps the father and not the other way around, that was only where the father or son had done terrible sins that would deny them a share in the world to come. But with ordinary people, who we don't have any reason to think they're any particularly more evil than the other people, so there he thinks it's probably true that Abba Mizaki Bra, that the Gemara didn't mean to deny that situation. There the father can certainly give merit to the son by saying Kaddish. So that'll depend, Yaakov said, depends on the minhag and the custom, on who gets what. There's a point out, there's a Tosas in Sota that notes that when David HaMelech mourns Avshalom after he's killed, so the Gemara there talks about Avshalom, and the Pasuk talks about him saying, Avshalom, Bini, 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 and the Gemara says that all the times that he said Bini, he lifted Avshalom out of Gehenna, which makes it seem very clear that that the effect of David HaMelech saying Bini, Bini, Bini works for him. Now, the truth is, that also even goes further than Shvut Yaakov. Shvut Yaakov said, if you have sins that are going to die, it could deny you a place in the world to come, the father might not be able to do that. And this Tosfos and Sota seems to think that you can. As in terms of also the question of under 20, don't they not punish them? So in the court, in the heavenly court, so don't they not need Kaddish? So there, the Rebbe Yehuda was asked that question as well, and he had said a famous phrase, what's it your business what they do in heaven or not? Meaning, why are you going to get in the way of people trying to make sure that somebody gets a better judgment in the world to come? The original context was a story about Chizkiyahu HaMelech refusing to have children because he says he knows that his children won't be good, that they'll violate the Torah, that they'll turn into idol worship. And the response that's given to him is, what's it your business? What Hashem does, it's not your business to think these things out. So too, that was the Rebbe Yehuda's instinctive reaction to the question of, what's it your business trying to figure out whether or not Hashem is going to punish somebody? Just let people say Kaddish. In addition, says the Rebbe Yehuda, it's impossible, it's impossible to imagine when the Gemara says that under the age of 20, you don't get under the age of 20, you don't get punished by the heavenly court. He can't mean literally you don't get punished for anything by the heavenly court. He says what? You mean that until you're 20, you can murder, you can kill, you can steal, you can rape, you can pillage, you can do all these terrible things, and it doesn't count for anything whatsoever? It can't mean that. It has to mean something more moderate than that in terms of the way that the heavenly court looks at you because you're under the age of 20 and things like that. And therefore, if somebody sadly passed away, and then he gives other example, I'm sorry, he quotes... He doesn't quote, he says himself. He says, imagine if somebody passed away before the age of 20 and he has little kids ages 5 or 6. So we're not going to give those kids any right to say Kaddish. So notice that in order to be able to imagine that scenario, if somebody passed away at 19 and has a 5-year-old, it means they have their first child at 14 because people were getting married that young. So he says in all these situations, and you know, and let's say somebody was under the age of 20 but they were over 13 and they were clearly physically adults and they violated the Torah, would we not accept korbanot from them? Because we say, well, Hakadosh Baruch Hu doesn't punish you for them. So the Sefer says that's all an exaggerated reading of it. It doesn't mean that. What it means is that Hashem won't punish them in this world. He won't punish them. He won't lead to them getting punished in this world for the things they did because they have time to grow up and to improve, but not that doesn't count. And therefore, if sadly somebody passes away, then there'd be room to say Kaddish and to try to improve their lot in the world to come. So those are two responses. The Chavot Yaron employee law. That's Chavot Yaron number. That's responsible number one for the fourth of Shvat, and then Tzitzit Eliezer saying Kaddish for a young man who passed away before the age of 20 by the father. That was responsible number two for the fourth of Shvat. Have a great day.